Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. When did the princess phase become a rite of passage for preschool girls, and does it ever really wear off? Journalist Peggy Orenstein has made a career of writing about the lives of contemporary American girls, but admits even she was a little daunted when a sonogram revealed she would become the mother of one. And when, at a family party a few years ago, she discovered then-3-year-old daughter Daisy engaged in a full-on game of princess to be followed by urgent requests for Barbie doll fairies, sparkly dresses, and pink plastic heels, she started to wonder, were these desires to appear uber-feminine a harmless and inevitable phase of girlhood, or an artificial response to multi-million-dollar marketing efforts? Orenstein writes about this all in her much-discussed new book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. Peggy, welcome to Think.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So I guess it is really one thing to earn your living as an expert on girls and another thing to be an expert when you're parenting a girl.
Well, you know, parenting is such a present tense thing, too. You know, when your child is 3 months old, you can't imagine having a 5-year-old. And when your child is 5, you probably don't want to imagine having a 13-year-old. And, you know, so it's really hard to, I think you have to actually, when you're in it, stuff is coming at you so thick and fast that it's hard to step back and really think about what it all means. So that's kind of why I wanted to do that and give that to parents.
Yeah, I mean, my theory is that you're never a better parent than before you actually have your first child.
No kidding, huh?
Did you have rules for yourself? And did you and your husband talk about the things you would not do with your daughter?
Oh, there were so many things, you know, that where I and I'm really clear in this book, I am totally a fellow traveler, right? I am inconsistent, I am hypocritical, I am contradictory, you know, I mean, in my own, you know, thinking and parenting, I just think that's what it means to be a parent. Mm-hmm. And I like to say that I'm not the tiger mom, I'm the dog on 4 roller skates mom.
I really love, there's a section in here where you write very candidly about this big meltdown that I guess the whole family had at Target over this Barbie Fairytopia thing, because I could completely relate to that.
So this is where we're going to go with this. Right on, what a bad parent I am.
No, it's not about that.
Actually, I think the one that got me more, if I may say, is the one in the L.A. airport.
Talk about that.
On the Southwest concourse for about 3 years, they had a display of Thai girls dolls, which are like, do you know what Bratz dolls are?
Yeah, the trashy-looking little girl dolls.
Yeah, trashy-looking little girl dolls, but plush. Mm-hmm. So these are like kind of stuffed ones.
Right.
And my daughter, when she was 4, just went, you know, Mom, can I have one of those? And something in me just snapped, and I just went, no, you are never going to have one of those. And she was just like, why not, Mom? And I said, because they're inappropriate. And she went, why are they inappropriate? And I just thought, you know what? I don't want to have to yell because they're slutty. That's why, at my daughter when she's 4 years old, you know. And I just thought, I am so tired. I was so tired of everything becoming a teachable moment. I mean, how many teachable moments do we have to go through here, you know? And I realized at that moment that when I was looking at this culture of little girlhood that my daughter and I were confronting, that, you know, went from pink and pretty to the diva to the hot and sexy, that it wasn't good enough just to say no. Because if you say no to your daughter, it's going to be very hard to convince her that that is the road to broader choices. And it's really important to find products, images, movies, books, et cetera, that you can say yes to that aren't just neutral, but that actually celebrate her as a girl.
Well, let's talk about the influences outside one's home, because there's, of course, the peer group and whatever, you know, other girls have, which is a big deal. And then, you know, the Disney Corporation alone has a $4 billion revenue stake in this princess thing.
I know, when you said at the beginning of this that it was a multi-million-dollar industry, I wanted to yell, no, multi-billion.
Well, multi-million in marketing, but multi-billion in revenue.
Yes,
yeah.
Right, multi-billion in revenues. Yeah, I mean, that was where sort of my curiosity first got piqued, was that we were raising our daughter, you know, thinking, oh, we don't want her to feel like there's anything she can't do because she's a girl, and we don't want her to think there's anything she has to do because she's a girl. And then she went off to preschool. And within about a week, she came home having memorized all the gown colors and names of the Disney princesses. Mm. And, you know, I was cool with Mulan. That was fine. But you know, those are not the main, she's not the main ones. And I had never heard of Disney princesses. And so, meanwhile, you know, we were going around, and the guy behind the counter at the the supermarket checkout guy would every time greet her with, "Hey, princess," and the lady at the drugstore would say, "Do you want a balloon?" and give her a pink one without, say, "I know what color you want," give her a pink one without asking. And we went to the dentist, and the dentist said, "Do you want to get in my princess chair so I can sparkle your teeth?" And I thought, geez, do you have a princess drill? You know, I mean, I just really wondered when, I did not remember. I remembered playing princess sometimes. I think we all do. But I did not remember this 24/7, 365 day a year press from the time a girl was 3 till she was about 6 to be entirely immersed in pink and princess. And so I just was curious about whether, why it had happened and whether it was a positive development or whether it was priming them for, you know, for sexualization later.
I wonder if you think that our generation of moms has slipped in our vigilance about this because it was our mothers who really fought the feminist movement, you know, fought for the feminist movement. And we sort of had it in some ways handed to us. And I don't want to make too many generalizations here, but, you know, we were sort of raised thinking, be careful of what you're told you can't do, and got the message so much that we're not so vigilant with our daughters.
Well, I don't know. I think it's a complicated question because, you know, on one hand, what the 1970s version of raising your daughters meant was actually in some ways to devalue the things that were associated with girls and to try to say you may not play with them. And I think that that's a mistake. But at the same time, I think that we talked so much and we're so focused on sort of, you know, feminism, or if you don't want to call it that, you know, girls' aspirations outside of the home or whatever, that we didn't talk a lot about how we wanted to change femininity and what that would mean to girls. And so I think the marketplace kind of rushed in to fill that gap because, you know, it is important for girls to express their girlness, and we do need to find a way to help them do that that's healthy and that will result in sort of, you know, more positive body image. I mean, if looking in the mirror and saying, "Am I the fairest of them all?" If when they were 15, they were still looking in the mirror and saying that in a good way, I'd be all about it. But, you know, that question starts being filled with doubt and anxiety, and more they're told that being pretty is really important, but you're not pretty enough unless maybe you buy this product.
You know, when you talk about the Disney princesses, of course, I have school-age children, and what morphs away, you know, as they morph away from Tinkerbell and right. You know, Ariel and all those, then they're watching the programs. And then you have these teenage girls. You know, I think about Miley Cyrus, who was this sweet, innocent princess, and now she's about to be an adult and doesn't want to be associated with that anymore. But she's got this whole generation of little girls still looking up to her.
Right. The flesh and blood Disney princesses, and clearly that is. I mean, the hope with Disney, the expectation, is that you start consuming their products when you're a princess, and that you keep on going with the line, so that you go to Disney Channel, you go to Miley and Demi and Lindsay and Brittany and, you know, all these other girls that have sort of fallen. And what happens is with those girls is that at first, you know, they present them to little girls, and they all wear those True Love Waits rings, saying that they're going to be virgins till they get married.
Right.
And they say things, you know, I look back at their interviews, Miley said things like, I choose clothing that mothers will give the thumbs up to and girls will like, and I look really young, and that's great. I want to stay that way. I'm in no hurry to grow up. You know, and 3 months later, she's dancing on the stripper pole, and the True Love Waits ring, of course, is gone. And I don't think you can make wholesomeness into a marketing gimmick and commodify it that way without commodifying and making into a marketing gimmick what comes after.
Yeah, and in so many ways, it's really not that wholesome to tell little girls or give them the impression that they are at their most beautiful when they're covered with glitter and wearing special clothes.
Right. The Disney version of that. Yeah, I mean, one thing I talk about is how often do we tell our daughters that they're beautiful when they've just, you know, worked out and they're all sweaty, you know, but how beautiful is that they're using their bodies for their strength and power rather than decorating them? And it's, you know, it's important to tell our daughters that they are, you know, that they're wonderful internally, but beauty comes from the inside and all of that, but also that, you know, when they look good, yes, but also when they're, you know, covered in mud because they've just been playing or, you know, something like that.
What about the supposedly more sort of woman-affirming toy lines like American Girl dolls? Can you talk about your day visiting? I guess you went to the flagship store in Manhattan.
the big story where I did not take my daughter with me. I made somebody else.
You had someone else's daughter with you.
I made somebody else go with their daughter because my daughter didn't know about American Girl, and I didn't want her to. Mary, I would not tell somebody, you know, don't get your daughter American Girl. But it's an interesting contradictory product line. You know, for one thing, in those books, the girls in the books, like Kit and Addie and all of them, they could never afford themselves in the store. So that's kind of curious. They had an American Girl of the Year who was a homeless American Girl doll a couple years ago. That caused a lot of controversy because, you know, A, that girl couldn't buy herself in the store, and B, she didn't have a lot of accessories. The books are interesting to me because they present these girls who are really valued and value themselves for their character and their actions. And in this weird way, they're sort of more free than girls today, even though they lived in times that were more oppressive and when women couldn't vote or, you know, own businesses or own land or anything. There's this way that they have this freedom from this kind of pressure to be pretty and hot and all of that. So that was really interesting to me. When you get in the store, of course, the whole thing is set up. I mean, there's, you know, I like a lot of the American Girl stuff. It's very expensive, and it's set up, you know, to get you to buy a lot and to get you to believe that shopping is how you share the feminine experience with your daughter. So, you know, I have great ambivalence about it. And when we got out of there with my girlfriend and her daughter, $500 poorer for the experience, even though she had said going in she wasn't into American Girl anymore, I noticed this kind of oscillating. It's across the street from Saks Fifth Avenue, and they had this oscillating display of a wheel spinning that said, buy, 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 buy. And I looked at it and thought, gosh, at least they're more honest about it.
Peggy Ornstein is my guest. Her new book is called Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. We'll resume our conversation with Peggy in a couple of minutes and invite you to join us at 1-800-933-5372. If you'd like to receive a copy of this book, everybody's talking about it right now. It is available at or above the $120 contribution level as a thank you gift. You can, of course, pick it up elsewhere as well. But it's here to entice you, perhaps, to become a member of KERA.
It's got glitter on the cover.
It's actually an awesome cover, yeah. And maybe not just, you like it too. You're not a girl, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll throw some glitter
everybody
on every once in a while.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go to kera.org.
She's Chris Boyd. I'm Jeff Whittington. I don't actually wear glitter, but, you know.
Not
this,
to work.
No, exactly. Yes. Secret safe. Call us 888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. As Chris said, we do have copies of Peggy's book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter, available for a $120 membership gift. And as Chris said, the book is out. It's getting a lot of attention. We're thrilled that we're able to have this conversation with Peggy on the show today and that you're able to be a part of it. We've got some calls. We've got some folks holding. We've had some emails come in. And it's great that you are participating in this conversation, just like you do in every conversation we have every day here on Think. What's this forum worth to you? What's the station worth to you? We'll decide and call us or contribute online.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, or you can go to kera.org online. We are down below. Yay! We are down below the $100,000 mark at $99,289 left to raise. It would be amazing if we could get down below $90,000 in this next hour of Think. All you have to do is make your single contribution right now, and you can get us there. There are thousands of you listening. If you will pick up the phone and make a contribution, it'll happen.
1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Chris is right. We know somewhere between 15 and 20,000 of you are probably listening right now, but we're just asking you to do your part at kera.org or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931.
Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is journalist Peggy Orenstein. Her new book is Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the Girly Girl Culture. You can join us by email to think@kera.org or on the phone at 1-800-933-5372. So, Peggy, let's talk about why this is a problem. I have two daughters, and I share your ambivalence on exactly how to navigate all this sometimes. Sometimes you can roll your eyes and think, well, this is a phase, it's temporary. What's the relationship between the princess phase in childhood and how young women feel about themselves as they become teenagers and adults?
Well, you know, from the get-go, girls are told now that being a girl is about beauty and play sexiness, essentially. So the princess, playing princess, it's not like 1 plus 1 equals 2, A plus B equals C.
Right.
You know, whatever. But the difference between the way that we played when we were kids and the way kids play now is like the difference between, black and white TV with 5 channels and a satellite dish. So it's you've got a $4 billion industry with 26,000 products that largely are, the mega, like if you look at Tangled, fun movie, right?
Yeah, this is about Rapunzel.
Rapunzel, yeah. Fun movie, semi-empowered heroine. Then you go into Toys R Us, and what the popular Tangled products are the Tangled Mega Cosmetics Kit, the Tangled Hair Braider, the Tangled Vanity Table and Mirror. And, you know, when I don't know if you saw just recently that Walmart rolled out a line of cosmetics for 8 to 12-year-old girls, anti-aging cosmetics.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I would give anything to have my 9-year-old's skin.
I know, right? And you would probably give anything to have your 9-year-old going on the playground worrying about which shade of lipstick she was going to wear, too. But when they talk about it, it was really interesting for me to read the press on it because they said, well, you know, girls wear clear nail polish and lip gloss when they're 3 or 4, and by the time they're 8, they're interested in a little enhancement, and it's just natural, and, we're providing that for them. And I was kind of thinking, like, in whose world are 8-year-olds interested in a little enhancement? But the product lines have been aging down. And the idea, if we were sitting here 10 years ago and we were talking about, should my daughter wear makeup and provocative dress and, questions of sexualization, meaning seeing yourself as others see you or seeing yourself as an object or being looked at as an object, we would be talking about 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds. Mm-hmm. We would not be talking about 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. So there's a way that that these issues and these ideas have been getting younger and younger and sort of narrower and narrower. And I think that's what concerns parents.
You almost
I
had
apologize. To... My call waiting just went off. I will ignore it.
Oh, anymore. It's okay. You almost had to, jump into the world of child pageants, and it had to be Texas, right? You couldn't find another state not already associated
I'm
with this.
I'm sorry, but that's where...
And it was Austin, which is like allergic to glitter and sparkles. But anyway, talk about what you found there.
What's really interesting to me was if I went to a toddler beauty pageant, and I really did not mean to cast any aspersions on Texas. That was just where they would let me go. But that if I went down there and I attacked the parents and I said, isn't this horrible? You know, that would be such an easy thing to do.
Because these are still people who love their kids.
And what?
These are people who love their kids.
These are people who love their children. Of course they are. And I wouldn't have learned anything by doing that. And I wouldn't have taught the reader anything by doing that. It would have just been knee-jerk. So I really like to not do that with my work. So I went down and really got to know some of the families and really liked them, first of all. And also, they had a variety of reasons for putting their children in pageants, some of which were class-based and some of which had other reasons. And in talking to them and hearing how they talked about it, it also occurred to me, and I've been thinking about this actually a lot since writing the book, too, that when we watch those shows that demonize those parents and those families, I think the reason they've become popular right now is that it's really comfortable for us and that we can look at that as feeling so far over the line.
That we must be okay.
That we must be okay, and it keeps us from asking questions about what we're doing with our girls. And, you know, and now, again, I don't mean to keep pointing at that Walmart thing, but it was sort of like a gift that dropped on my lap last week. is that different? You know, I mean, you're not letting your daughter compete for money, but when she's having the makeover party when she's 4 years old and then walking on the catwalk with her friends, is that really that different? Is the message to your daughter really that different? Hmm. And it's not about, you know, the over the line is often not always obvious, but the question is where the line is, who draws it, and how.
We have an email here from Jasmine in Arlington who writes, as an African-American girl, my mother, grandmother, aunts, and women in my life instilled in me that we are queens, and I was therefore a princess. This was always a message of strength and not weakness. Is it possible the message of weakness is the problem with young women, not the idea that we are princesses?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because I think that, you know, I certainly, in trying to offer alternative images to my daughter, some of them were princesses. And I think it's not that that princesses are inherently bad in any way. And I actually love the traditional fairy tales. I have a whole chapter on my, you know, how much I love the traditional fairy tales. And in the end of the book, come back to them as giving me, you know, a kind of lesson about the strength of motherhood. So it's not an inherent thing. It's just that it's so narrow, and they are being so narrowly defined and so pervasive that, you know, yes, the idea of queen and princess in the African American community is often a very strong idea, and I'd leave it to somebody else to sort of think about that and critique it. But then you go into, say, Radio Shack, and we were there the other day, and they had these robotic teacup pink pigs, and you press their nose, and one of them was named Princess, and you press her nose, and she oinks, she goes, and then she goes, my name is Princess, and I'm a princess, and you press her nose again, and she says, I'm going to marry the prince, and you press it again, and she says, I'm going to live in the castle, and you press it again, and she says, do you like my party dress? I want a new dress, and it just kind of goes on from there, and you're just like, it was like a parody, like, yeah. If I was going to do a parody of this, that's what I would do. So, you know, it's not that every image of princesses is bad, but it has become sort of the only game in town. So it's gone from being one of a number of choices of the ways girls play to being sort of a mandate.
You know what's funny, though, Peggy? As I read books for the show, I write down notes on a separate piece of paper. And like three times in my notes during the reading of this book, I wrote, but are princesses known to be particularly happy? Like, you think about, you know, our image, at least in this country, of what a princess is in the real world. It's like Diana and Fergie, and they were miserable.
Yeah. I know. Isn't that interesting? Very few people have asked me about that, but I find it an interesting thing to contemplate. And I suppose I should be thinking of writing something about Kate Middleton.
Yeah.
But and what she's walking into. And I haven't really been following the press on her, but I think I should more because I'm interested to see how she'll be portrayed. I think right now, my sense is with her that William is stepping up and saying, I don't want her to turn into my mother, or be treated like my mother, I should say. And I don't know whether that's possible. And you're right. I mean, the contemporary human being, actual royalty, not so good. Fergie and Diana and Masako in Japan and Princess Caroline and stuff. Not because that really, the whole business of beauty and grace and graciousness is not the job of the princess in the end. The real job of the princess, marry the prince and have a boy. Have a baby.
Yeah, it's as old-fashioned as that.
Well, that is their job, right? I mean, that really, truly is their job. And it's a lot of pressure, and it's difficult. But that's not, you know, girls don't know that. Little girls aren't paying any attention to that. They don't know about Diana.
But their moms are, who call them princess.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that the princess, and it's a really interesting set of ideas, but I think that the princess fantasy for our little girls is a fairy tale fantasy, and it's about being the special one. I don't even think right now that it's about happily ever after with a prince so much. I don't think that's what... it's interesting to me that there are no prince dolls in any of these things. There's no prince really anywhere.
Well, that's because boys have the superheroes are their expression
of
power.
But I mean for the girls. The girls are not playing princess with a prince.
Uh-huh.
And they're also not playing princess with the arc of humility and being in a sort of... humble and possibly oppressed position, and through your own goodness and kindness and compassion, eventually being recognized and elevated to princess stature. They just want stuff.
Yeah. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We will take a quick break. No, actually, we have time for a call before we take our break. Let's go to Carol in Mesquite. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm calling. Let me preface my comment by saying I'm 65 years old. That tells you that I was raised in the 50s. And being a girly girl was the furthest thing from my imagination. If there was anything that I wanted to ask for, it was guns and holsters. I had an entirely different childhood than that. I watched my nieces in perplexion because I have some nieces who are girly girls, and I thought, I envy them that, because it gives them a dimension about themselves as women that I found myself personally to have missed out on.
Well, that's a really interesting perspective, Carol, and I appreciate your call. What do you think about that, Peggy?
Well, I think it's like I said earlier that I, you know, the answer to reducing the obsession with beauty and play sexiness and the potential for sexualization is not to give them things that we associate with boys. Although, you know, they're certainly welcome. You know, that's certainly fun to do. You know, fine. But to find ways to celebrate being a girl and femininity that are not going to lead them down the path towards appearance obsession. So, for instance, one thing we did, we read a lot of child-friendly Greek myths, and I preface that with child-friendly because, you know, they're pretty gory. And so for Halloween, instead of going as a princess, Daisy went as Athena. And
that's
Athena,
awesome.
The goddess of war and wisdom, right? She has a great outfit, mm-hmm. you know, and she gets to wear that thing on her head and, the, you know, and she carries a sword and everything. But she's very clearly feminine as well, and she's complex, and she's about a whole different set of values, but they're values that are very embedded in being a girl. So, you know, it's not like saying you may not play with dolls, you may play with trucks, you know, at all. Because there's, and I don't know, maybe we should talk about this after the break, but I can talk about the developmental reasons why girls need to assert their girlness.
Well, talk about that, because we know that, that initially they don't necessarily understand that there's an anatomical difference. They just think that, that you're sort of socialized to be a boy or girl. Is that right?
Well, it's not so much socialized. It's that they don't understand that, you know, for most of us, the sex that we were born is going to be permanent
yeah.
and that you couldn't suddenly switch. So they, when they're like three, until they're like maybe six, they don't realize that they could, they think they could grow up to be either a mommy or a daddy.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes you a boy or a girl? It's not the anatomy. It's whether or not you wear barrettes. So that's why when your daughter turns three, all of a sudden she throws a, you know, holy fit if you try to wrestle her into pants, because she doesn't want you turning her into a boy.
Yeah.
She needs to be a girl, and girls wear dresses. And they will make anything into an excuse to, you know, separate gender. So they will, like, you know, girls eat oranges and boys eat apples, you know, or something like that. So they need to do that. That said, you know, there's a lot of different ways they can do it. And also what's very and the same thing with toy choice. Toy choice at that age, you know, boys going for things that roll and girls going for things with faces, that seems to be true everywhere, even with monkeys.
Hmm.
So, you know, that stuff is real. Those differences are real. That said, if girls and boys are allowed to sort of, you know, go down those paths in an extreme way, the little differences between them in terms of cognitive difference or psychological difference or emotional difference become big gaps. Just like when, you know, when you learn, when you're a baby, you're born able to, you know, make sounds of all languages. But as you get older and learn the language that you're raised in, you lose the ability, you know, to roll your R's or, you know, make clicking sounds or do whatever other languages have. Those things go away. So there's skills and ways of being and ways of interacting that atrophy when your daughter is, you know, raised in her pink room with her Pinkalicious, reading Pinkalicious, sitting with her pink Scrabble set that says F-A-S-H-I-O-N on the cover. You know, it makes those cross-play moments very difficult. And that was one thing as a parent going through the reporting for this book that really struck me and affected how personally how I parent.
Journalist Peggy Orenstein is my guest. Her new book is called Cinderella Ate My Daughter, Dispatches from the Front Lines of the New Girly Girl Culture. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. If you would like to receive a copy of Peggy Orenstein's new book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter, you can receive it today when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level. You can do that either at kera.org or by calling 1-888-694-6931. $98,209 left to raise in this fundraising campaign. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. So in about a minute and a half, Chris, we're going to go to special NPR coverage of the unfolding situation in Egypt. And that's about a minute and a half from right now. So we do have $98,209 left to raise. But events have been, if you've been following the news, and everyone who listens has probably been following the news, you've been hearing it on the NPR newscasts today. But events have been unfolding pretty rapidly the last few hours in Egypt. And NPR is going to be bringing special coverage in about a minute. And we're going to take that live. So take this opportunity right now to join the station, support the station that brings you this. A great conversation with Peggy Orenstein. We do have her book available at the $120 membership level. But you can support the station at kera.org or by calling 888-694-6931.
Down now to $97,959. It's wonderful to start to see this happening faster and faster, and your contributions make it possible. Once we get down below the $100,000 mark, it happens faster, and you only need to make one contribution, and we really appreciate it. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. We have gifts available at a variety of levels, including copies of Cinderella Ate My Daughter at or above the $120 contribution level. So let's hear from you now, please, at kera.org or on the phones at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks very much, and here's your special coverage.